5. So I'm going to make sure that you, I want you to know that it's going to be rough travels Wednesday night, tonight into Thursday. So be careful. If you don't need to go anywhere, stay home. Have a snow day. Okay, so I am Ruth Altamira Roll, your host for Counselors Chat. And as you know, it's not very often that I have a guest, but I would like to welcome Anne Wolf. She is also a licensed professional counselor, and she's my guest for today. And we're going to be talking about caregivers. So to start off, I want to welcome you.
Thank you.
And maybe you can just tell us a little bit about yourself and how you became a counselor.
Okay. Well, my name is Anne Wolf. I'm a counselor down in Red Bank, New Jersey. About 7 years ago, I received my license to be an LPC, and I began to work in the field. I got my master's degree from Kane College, which is now Kane University.
Yeah.
So it took me a while to get the rest of the credits. I raised a family and had other careers. This is like a third career for me overall. I worked for the state of New Jersey for the Department of Public Welfare before this.
Okay.
So I know all about public programs and how they work.
Yeah. So you're interested, though, in caregiving. So how did you, or caregivers, how did you get interested in that?
Well, I got interested in it when I started dating my husband. His grandmother had dementia and Alzheimer's. And I saw how his family reacted to it. And she lived at my in-law's house until she got really badly. And then she had to go to an assisted living place. And then about 7 years ago, I was diagnosed with breast cancer.
Oh.
And there was a lot of things to think about, tubes and wires and people taking you back and forth. And my husband did most of it, so I was very lucky. And I was lucky that I didn't need chemo or radiation. I just had to have a mastectomy.
Okay.
But it made you start thinking that you have to you eventually have to depend on somebody else.
Yes.
And for lots of us, that's really hard, especially women, because we are the ones that take care of everybody else. Children, husbands, jobs now, no jobs.
Right.
Whatever we do, we're the ones that are the more nurturing.
We are. We are the main, we tend to be the main caregivers. Absolutely. And as I mentioned, with just before we were getting started, my mom now is in assisted living, and so I am her primary caregiver. Even though she has caregivers at the assisted living, but I still somewhat supervise that and take care of doctor's appointments for her and
everything else about her life.
Yeah.
They take care of her physical body,
right?
And you have to take care of her spiritual, mental.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
Everyday thing. So is the insurance being paid? You know, does she have cable in her room? Is that being paid? And then you have to make sure that the people who are taking care of her are doing their job correctly.
Right. That's right.
So it's really another full-time job for you or for anybody else that does it.
It really is a full-time job. And so, you know, as a counselor, our job is to be caregivers in so many ways to our clients, even though hopefully we're teaching them and giving them coping skills so they could go off and take care of themselves. You know, that's sort of one of the main goals there. But we do have to be present for them and caretake them and when they really need a shoulder to cry on and, you know, those kinds of things. And our own, you know, husbands, our own homes, our own children, you know, and like now I've also got my mom. It's like having five full-time jobs.
Right. And so how do you get to take care of yourself within the midst of all this. And that's really what I'm interested in. You know, you could always hire a caregiver. In fact, last Tuesday, which was the 31st, was National Caregiver Day.
Okay.
And there was an article in our newspaper, the Asbury Park Press, that spoke about caregivers through agencies.
Right.
You know, there's lots of private agencies, home health aides, and things like that.
Right, like Helping Angels or whatever that one is.
Yeah, I mean, there are hundreds of them all over New Jersey in different counties. And even the state of New Jersey runs a program. And Visiting Nurses,
right.
Runs a program.
Yeah.
So it was National Caregivers Day, and I just happened to take out the article so I could put it in with everything else. And it just talked about how these people's job is doing this for strangers. And, you know, what a wonderful thing that it is that the people who care enough to help other people.
Yeah. It is a wonderful thing that we do have people like that in our society that mm-hmm. that really are caring and have the heart to help people that are in need.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good thing. Sometimes I think about myself. One of the things that you said, I don't remember if it was before we were on air, uh-huh. or I don't quite remember, but, you know, it's hard to, you know, we're the ones that tend to be the caregivers at some point, giving up that control, for lack of any other word, and have somebody care for us. Even though I have a stepson, I mean, I don't have children, and I think, oh my gosh, you know, what if, you know, it's just me, and who's going to take care of me when I'm, you know, 89 years old? And so every once in a while that question goes through my head, because I don't necessarily see that I may have a caregiver to do a lot of the things that mm-hmm. I do for my mom. And it's a little daunting to think about that, you know, and it's good to know that there are services out there, that there are people that can do that for you.
Right. But even if you have children, I have three daughters, and right now one of my daughters lives in Washington, D.C., and I have two daughters at home because they can't afford to find a place to live that's within their means. So do you really want, you know, as a mother, do I really want to be a burden, even if I'm 89 years old and can't walk?
Yeah.
To my daughters.
No, I don't think that we want to be a burden. I don't, you know, my mother would say that, it says that to me, I don't want to be a burden. And I don't necessarily see her as a burden. Mm-hmm. It's just something now that it's just part of our lives now.
Right. And it's part of many people's lives.
Right.
I remember when I was going to college 1,000 years ago, and there was a lot of talk about that sandwich generation.
Right.
Those people who are caught, get caught between taking care of their children and then taking care of their parents, and how they get stuck in this role as so much as a caregiver that they never can get out of it, that it just becomes a gradual, all-encompassing experience.
Yeah, I have some clients like that. They're really, you know, sandwiched in the middle between taking care of their kids and families and taking care of their elderly parents and or even grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
They're overwhelmed. It's very overwhelming.
And I wonder how much of today's society causes the added friction. Because
how do you mean?
Well, if you remember in the olden days, people lived as family units.
Right.
Family lived in the same area, even in the same house.
Right.
Or even in the same apartment.
Right.
And so when somebody needed to be taken care of, there was a lot of people to help them take care of whoever's sick. So if you're in a house with two aunts and their families and your grandmother and your family, well, if you can't take care of your grandmother that day, somebody from one of your aunt's families would come and take it. And because of these distances, it's now falling on one or two people
And that's, you know, that's a really good description. I remember when my grandmother and grandfather, my father's parents, mm-hmm. were ill. My aunts, he has three sisters, one lived upstairs, mm-hmm. one lived four houses down, and one lived about a mile and a half away. And they would take turns, you know, so that it got spread out, you know, a week's worth of caretaking got spread out amongst the three of them. And my dad, good Italian family, he didn't do all that much except trim the hedges and cut the grass and that kind of stuff.
Which all is, those male things.
All those male things, right. But for me, I have a brother, and he lives an hour away, and he's got, you know, issues in his own within his own family, and so it does fall 98% on my shoulders. So, you know, there isn't any respite, really.
Right.
Yeah.
And then there are, you know, some caregivers do it because they want to and get no help, and their siblings may not want to help at all, or for whatever reason only takes part of whatever the problem is, and that causes friction between maybe siblings.
Right.
I know that I have a client who has his mother-in-law in the house, and his wife has several siblings, not far, anywhere between 15 minutes to an hour away, but they don't come and help. And if they do, they think they're doing you a giant favor. Oh, well, I'll take her for lunch. Yeah, and who's going to help me the other 23 hours during the day, days a week? So it gets to be very difficult, especially for the people who are there the major part of the time.
Yeah, I identify. I identify. Yeah.
I think we can all think of, if not ourselves, somebody
that we know.
A friend of ours or a cousin or
I know I have a friend that's, you know, when her parents went into assisted living, there was a lot of push pull between her and her brother, and you know, who's going to help with what. And she had to lay the law down, you know, with her brother and say, look, you're going to just have to. I have clients that will say, you know, mom is here, I'm making all the decisions, and my sister who lives in Oklahoma is always complaining that I'm not doing a good job. You know, so I hear that quite frequently. You
that
know,
happens like, a lot.
Yeah, that the sibling that is furthest away complains the loudest.
And when push comes to shove and you say, okay, I'll send mom to you, Oklahoma doesn't want mom to come.
Right.
They just want to be in charge of giving their 2 cents.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess one of the things I'm wondering, what are some of the things that... I know we kind of touched on it, but what are some things that caregivers have to do?
Well, caregivers, it could be as easy as going to somebody's house once a day to make sure they take their pills, or it could be as difficult as having somebody have to come in to your home with your family or whatever and do almost everything. You know, there is not one thing, you know, there's no definition of caregivers that says, well, this is what a caregiver has to do, except to give care.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really just the amount that you have to lay out. So, you know, the definition for a caregiver is someone who takes care of somebody who is sick, disabled, or can't take care of themselves.
Right.
So everybody has differing paths that they have to take. Even you, your situation is not that different than a lot of people. While you don't have the stress of having your mother in your home and having to worry about her, like, is somebody in the house? can she be alone in the house? Does she need help doing those everyday things that you have to do, like personal hygiene? Can she feed herself? Do you have to have food out for her? You know, do I have to have the TV on? Does she know how to work the cable box? I can barely work the cable box.
Right, exactly.
Let alone somebody who might be 89 and starting the first right. stages of dementia or anything.
Right.
So you have your mother in a assisted living
right.
kind of where that those everyday functions are taken care of.
Yeah, I am so grateful. My brother and I had really pushed my dad maybe about 12, 13 years ago to get long-term health care insurance. And he did it kicking and screaming for my mom. He didn't do it for himself because mm-hmm. he was a World War II veteran and said, I'll use the VA system if I need anything. But I really thank God that he had done that because my mom really needs that 24/7 care. She had a cooking fire in her apartment when she was living alone. She mm-hmm. slipped and fell in the bathtub a couple of times. You know, and there's definitely signs of some, you know, dementia showing up, and there's just no way. And I don't know how it would have worked if she came in to live with us because I have a job that's got crazy hours. I mean, you know, as a therapist,
yeah.
my husband's got a job with crazy hours, and we have a tendency to eat dinner at 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock at night. She wants to eat at five in the afternoon, you know, she'd be sitting by herself. I just can't conceive how it would work. She would want to be sleeping and we would be taking a shower or watching the news or it just doesn't work. And so I am so grateful that we had the, you know, the forethought of seeing to it that my mom has the financial means of being in assisted living because they are extremely expensive.
Right.
And
you must be very lucky because unless you get long-term health insurance, I'm sorry, my brain just stopped.
Yeah.
If you don't get it early enough, then it becomes very price prohibitive.
Right. It does.
And the services that it includes, that's another thing that you have to think about when you want to hire a caregiver mm-hmm. or keep somebody in the home. You have to think about what does it cover? How much does it cover? Sometimes they cover 3 hours a day,
right.
three times a week.
Right.
And sometimes they cover 24/7. And think about if you're mother or father or whoever it is, child, whoever it is, needs 24-hour care, and you have them in your home, that's a lot. That could run into thousands of dollars per week.
Per week.
Not even a year. Per week.
Yeah. It's extremely expensive.
Right. So you're very lucky that your mother's long-term health care covers those kinds of things.
I know it. And she needed to have two areas of daily living, like needing help bathing and needing help getting dressed and mm-hmm. needing help eating. And there needed to be two of these list of like seven or eight things that she needed to meet, which the first time she didn't. So this has been a process. She got denied the first time, and then as she's been there, things have been deteriorating for her. And so luckily she was able to meet the qualifications, and because otherwise she really wouldn't have the money. A lot of times with assisted living, just for people who are listening may not realize this, a lot of times you have to pay 2 or 3 years out of pocket before something like Medicaid kicks in. And so that's where she's living. She has to pay 2 years out of pocket, which, you know, includes the long-term health care and whatever else.
And we're talking about thousands, maybe even hundreds of thousands of dollars.
I'll just say for my mom, it's $7,000 a month.
And which is pretty reasonable.
Which is reasonable. I know people who pay $10,000, $12,000 a month. It depends on the level of amount of care
that the person
needs.
And not only that, you have, if you put your loved one in a assisted living situation, you have to make sure that that assisted living place is knowledgeable about the regulations, right, and the rules, and is able to update this information. Maybe if, unfortunately, if somebody deteriorates to a degree, things move faster,
right,
to some degree.
Right.
And so, just because you're not taking care of their everyday physical needs, their other needs are just as important. You know, you have to also stay on top of those
Absolutely.
Things. And today, now with everything that's happening in Washington, how much is the loss of Obamacare and how much is the loss of other benefits going to affect people?
Yeah.
And your mother's very lucky that she has you and your husband here, and even in your brother in Oklahoma or wherever.
Yeah, he's South Jersey, but still.
You know, you right. have three people who care about this person.
Right.
What if you're a person who has nobody?
Right.
And you have to have strangers start this process yep. for you. So you're wary of the people who are helping you, but you're afraid of being alone and not having anybody help you.
Yeah. It's a precarious situation.
People don't realize, when we think about getting older, we think about retiring, driving around the United States,
playing golf, right?
You know, taking cruises, which is all very wonderful. But what happens if you can't do that?
Right.
And what happens if you decide that's what you want to do, but your child gets sick, or your parents get sick? Sometimes those things just fall to the wayside.
Yeah.
So caregivers have a lot of push and pull in their life.
And sleepless nights.
Sleepless nights. You know, we're talking about caregivers as your mother, because in some ways it's easier to think of, okay, I need a caregiver because I'm getting older and all that thing. But there are caregivers for children
Absolutely.
Or even young adults who are.
Absolutely.
Who cannot take care of themselves
yeah.
or their parents can't take care
yeah.
of themselves.
Absolutely.
So it runs the gamut.
It does.
And maybe, I think I have found that some people who have to take care of younger people rather than older parents or older aunts, uncles, there is so much more guilt involved in that situation, because you don't want to know that something in your own DNA
right.
caused harm to your child.
Right. Right.
So.
Well, I've got a neighbor across the street who is very deeply involved in fostering heroin addicted babies.
Tough.
And so that's, you know, that's being a caregiver. You know, and just taking them to the doctors and MRIs and speech therapy and physical therapy and, you know, all kinds of, she's, you know, very active in their care. And so that's, you know, that's the choice that she's making. And it takes up a lot of her time.
Probably 98% of it.
Yeah.
But that's also a really good example of how sometimes caregiving is not necessarily a horrible
right.
bad thing. You know, here's a woman who is willing to foster children who would not maybe survive because somebody
right.
could not care for them.
Right.
So caregiving runs that gamut. It's not only for the end or for the middle. It's for giving these kids maybe a chance.
Yeah.
So many things we do, we care give and don't even think about it as caregiving. It's only in those extreme cases that it gets that label.
Right. That's true. So we need to take a little break, just a little commercial break so that keep our show on the road, yeah, as it were. So Ann Wolf was my guest. She's a licensed professional counselor. And we're talking about caregiving. And I'm Ruth Altamirol, also a licensed professional counselor and your host for Counselor's Chat. So we'll be back in just a few moments.
Rab Coins of Flemington, New Jersey has been in business for over 37 years. We are highly competitive buyers of gold, silver, and platinum coins, jewelry, and scrap metals, and have recently been named the exclusive gold buyer for Diamond Nation and HealthQuest. We also provide professional appraisal, sales, and liquidation services for individuals, law firms, estate trustees, and bank trust departments in New Jersey and Philadelphia. Products and services include gold and silver, American and foreign coins, certified rare date and modern coins, numismatic supplies and books, gold, silver, and platinum bullion, paper currency, United States proof, and mint sets, including current issues. From junior collector to the experienced investor, Rab Coins has been for numismatists since 1974. Founder and owner, Randy Block, an expert numismatist, has been an active member of the coin industry for over 45 years. Visit us at 56 Main Street in historic downtown Flemington or call toll-free 1-800-819-9875.
Hey, this is Big C of Good Morning Hunterdon on HuntingChamberRadio.com. Like what you hear on Hunting Chamber Radio? Now you can take it with you. Download our Hunting Chamber Radio app from iTunes and Google Play Store now. Get schedules, station information, listen live, or to the latest podcasts. Everything in the palm of your hand or in your car during your commute. Get the HuntingChamberRadio.com app today.
Home Instead Senior Care. It's our passionate dedication to creating personal relationships between our clients and our caregivers. Visit our website at www.homeinstead.com/325.
You've got a friend.
Lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. Let me repeat, lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. This is not a crazy diet or exercise program. No drugs, hormones, or shots. You can lose 20 to 45 pounds in 40 days with Nutrimost Resonant Frequency Technology to measure 2,800 of your body's key biomarkers. Using NRF, they can find and correct the cause of your weight problem by measuring factors affecting weight gain, including metabolism, fat burning, fat storage, appetite, detoxification, and hormonal regulation. It's safe, fast, easy, and effective, and you won't walk around hungry or have cravings. It's even doctor supervised. Schedule a body composition analysis and consultation. You can be transformed in 40 days guaranteed. This is a limited time offer, so they can't wait to see you look great.
So call 888-718-7077. That's 888-718-7077. Or visit njthin.com. That's njthin.com.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Well, good afternoon and welcome back to Counselor's Chat. I'm Ruth Altamirol, your host for the program, and we are talking about caregivers, and I have a guest today, Ann Wolf. She's also a licensed professional counselor. And for those of you that do listen to Counselor's Chat, Again, I'd just like to welcome you for listening and thank you for listening and let you know that one of the main reasons I do this show is to promote good mental health and let you know what licensed professional counselors do. We are not social workers, we're not psychologists, and we're not psychiatrists. We are counselors, and we are highly trained in the field of counseling. So as a licensed professional counselor, I will promote licensed professional counselors over any other mental health practice. And as you also know, I don't say mental illness. I say mental health because I like to think of it as a way to get healthy. So that's something that I like to say. So Ann and I have been talking about being a caregiver, and we've been using me actually as an example. And during our commercial break, I was talking about sort of how I have to noticing how I have to be ready for things like I kind of think of it like I'm an expectant mother. I have to have my suitcase ready.
Well, I think a lot of people should think about if they are being caregivers for a family member that they should have all the right paperwork in one place. I remember when I used to work for the welfare system and I would visit people in their homes, people have all their paperwork all over their house. You know, you need to see birth certificates, social security cards, health cards, or whatever else there is. And I eventually started giving out zipper pouches that you put in three-ring binders.
Right, right.
And I had people put their paperwork for each of their children in these pouches. So they always knew where the social security card was, where the birth certificate was, where whatever other paperwork they needed for that child. And also had them make files, or tried to make. I don't know how well it worked. It's now been several years since I worked for the state. But to have files about with all that important paper, because not only do you need it when you go to register your children for school or for a program, my clientele were welfare clients, and they needed to bring it with them every 6 months when they would go for their appointments with the welfare system.
Right.
And it was always better to have everything that day than to have to send something later on, because it always delayed something.
Sure.
So in the same vein, as a caregiver, you might want to think about, okay, I have a copy of my mom's Medicaid card, or a copy of her health insurance policy with the declaration page, her birth certificate, in case somebody, you know, you mentioned during the break or before we started that your father was a World War II veteran. Well, if there are benefits during that for that, that also needs to be put into place.
Right.
So maybe you need to get like those little things in Staples where you have a couple of sections.
Right.
It's like a accordion folder.
Yep.
And that way, whenever you go out, you have that all that information in one place.
Yeah.
So that's something that you can do for everybody.
Sure. And I will say, it is something that I have done. I do have.
You're right.
Yeah. I mean, I have like four file folders that are all basically, they're hanging folders. They're all in the same place. And one of them is for the VA and all of that information,
right,
with information about my dad. And they needed a copy of my mother, of their marriage certificate, and, you know, his discharge papers and his death certificate. So all of that's in one file. And then I've got copies of some of that stuff in the file for her long-term health care. And then I got copies of some of that stuff, you know, and then a medical file, like I was saying, you know, I realize I need, because she's got a living will and I'm power of medical, I'm not even sure what to even call it, to make decisions if she can't, you know. So I've got that in her Medicare card. I got all of that clipped together and that's in a file. So again, it's sort of that grab and go kind of thing. And as I was saying, even just taking my mother someplace, making sure that I've got a bottle of water for her and throat lozenges for her and a cane for her, because sometimes she forgets to bring her cane, and
things that you don't even think of as important.
Right.
Throat lozenges.
Right, exactly.
Because your throat gets dry. And it could be almost anything.
Yeah.
You know, as people progress, their needs and wants might change to something bizarre.
Right. Yeah.
They might need to have some book with them.
Yeah.
Or something that they can hold on to that's soft and fuzzy.
Absolutely. It's like making sure when you've got little children that you bring toys or a coloring book and crayons, you know, stuff like that to keep them occupied and...
Well, that's very... And it's funny that you say coloring books because they're very popular now,
right.
Adult coloring books. And everything that I've read about those kinds of things, it all goes back to the idea of how color affects us, all that Jungian theory that I cannot even explain to you. It makes sense when you read it, but you can't really repeat it to anybody.
It's true.
So, you know, I have, there are things that when you are a caregiver that you have to do. They could include providing a home for somebody, could include legal help and support, help with financial decisions, deal with medical issues, either physical or mental, and just to help them make decisions. And those are things that you have to do every day.
It is.
And sometimes if you know if your parents or your child have long-term problems, you need to begin to think about all these decisions way before they start to show up. So when you said you had your father buy your mother long-term health care, that was a really good idea. You know, going with your parent to a lawyer or to the doctor's office gives you the beginning of the knowledge that you will need as you have to provide care for them.
Right.
And will make the situation easier as it gets along, because the parent or child or whoever it is will feel comfortable knowing that you're there.
Yeah, my mom really has learned to rely on me probably 110%. You know, I'm not sure what I should do. You help me make the decision. You know, and it could be just about what book I want to read. You know, so she's, I'm not sure which book I want to read. I'm like, well, you know, and so I help her with even something as, I'm going to say minor, and yet it's not minor, you know, so it is a lot of work and it is draining. So I guess one of the things that I'm wondering are, what are some things that caregivers can do to take care of themselves? Because one of the things that I'd like to do when I do my show is, you know, I list all of the issues, and then I do like to sort of get to the point where, gee, we're not really stuck in this, that there are ways for the caregiver to give.
Oh, definitely.
Self-care.
Because caregivers can get burnt out extremely quickly.
Sure. Well, what are some symptoms of that burnout?
Becoming overwhelmed and very frustrated, not only with the person you're giving care to, but any situation in your life. Little things get blown out of proportion. Maybe you can't concentrate on more than one thing. Because, you know, as we've talked about, as women, we handle multi-things. We can do 12 things at a time, where maybe our husbands or significant others can't do 4 at the same time. Maybe you lash out. You get so angry that it could get to a point where there could be physical complications from this. Not that you want to do it, but the frustration leads you to lash out at people. You start getting depressed. You know, what am I here for? Am I here only to be somebody else's everything? And is that what you want? Do you want to be somebody's everything? When you fall in love with someone, and even parental child love, you can only be so much.
Right.
You have to still be yourself and make the whole experience a positive one. But when you're everything, it puts burdens on everybody. So some of the things you can do is to find a support system. So maybe that means you have a sibling or have somebody else come into the home. Sometimes if you're noticing, especially with dementia and things like that, the sooner you can get somebody in your home or in their home, if they're still living alone, the easier it'll be down the road. If they know that somebody comes every day at 12 o'clock to help make sure they take their pills, help them shower, it will be easier if that caregiver needs to come more often. It won't be like they're not used to it.
And right.
You can get through that whole thing, I can do it by myself kind of stuff. You can get through that easier. And it could also be a doctor, a therapist, an LPC.
An LPC.
A support group.
Right.
Maybe the person worked somewhere and they have coworkers that like to come and visit. Like, I remember when I worked for the welfare system, we had friend clubs. You know, you just get together and schmooze and talk. Maybe you play cards or something. But if somebody was sick, you would visit them. And people's churches or religious organizations, temples, mosques, usually have some kind of program where people will go and sit with you. Like when you're in the hospital and the chaplain comes. Well, this is sort of that at home.
Right.
So that might be some places that you can ask for help in the beginning so that maybe you're not taking care of them 24/7. Maybe you're taking care of them only half a day.
Right.
Which would is still a lot of time, but much better than 24 hours a day. And you have to be the person to ask the questions about the about your parent or child. You have to know what their problems are when they when you feel uncomfortable with what you see. And you have to be their voice. Like when you go to the doctor, make sure that you bring a tape recorder. Or if you have questions in between, write them down. Not necessarily in the notes section of your phone, which is wonderful because we all carry them all over, but in a separate place that you... I always keep a notebook. I have a big black bound book that I put lots of interesting things in. But if I know I'm going to the doctor, I know that there are there's a place where I know the questions are.
Right.
And one of the good things about that, when I had my breast cancer and I would go to the surgeon, I could not understand anything that my surgeon said. You know, like on Charlie Brown and the mothers.
Yeah, wah, wah, wah,
wah, wah, wah. That's what it sounded like.
Yeah.
And I'm a fairly intelligent woman. I like to think that I am. But I could not comprehend anything. So I always needed to have somebody come with me. Because how many times can you ask the doctor to repeat
what they're
saying without them getting totally disgusted at you? So my husband or one of my daughters would come with me. So they could hear exactly what's happening. And later on when I needed to know or when I wanted to know, they could explain it to me, not in that stressful situation.
Right.
You don't, because sometimes when it's, when you're hurt or anything like that, you can't always think about what's actually happening.
Yeah.
You want it fixed, and then you'll worry about what the ins and outs of it are later on. And you have to try to keep, the caregiver has to try to keep their life as normal as possible.
That's the challenge.
So if you go out on Tuesday night to have dinner with somebody, make sure that you can still go out on Tuesday night and have dinner with that person. Try to keep normalcy within this range of things that you do.
Yeah, I'm going to say I find that's probably
the hardest.
The hardest thing, because there's a lot of things that I feel that that I've kind of put on the back burner because I don't have time for.
But it's important, even for your everyday life, even if you weren't taking care of your mom. you know, as a LPC, that you have to do those things, because how can you do the rest of the things? So you have to be healthy also. The caregiver has to be healthy, which means they have to eat right. They can't, you know, maybe they should be exercising. Maybe they should be talking to somebody. Stay connected to the people that are important to them. And you don't have to burden them with everything that happens in your life, because you need to have your own life within this whole system.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
I know, I think one of the things that I do keep hold of is the getting away.
Right.
You know, giving myself, you know, my husband and I taking weekends and getting away. And saying no, I think, is also making sure things are in place for my mom. And even though she said, well, I really want you to do it, I'm like, you know what? They can, like, her, where she's living, Tuesdays and Thursdays, if she needs to go, I don't know, to the drugstore to pick up lotion, you know. Mm-hmm. Well, can't you do it? Well, no, they do it, you know. So, rely on them. So I find that saying no a lot of times can be, especially if I know that there's something else in place that can take care of that for her.
Right.
Yeah. I don't have to do everything.
Right. But the person that you're caregiving for wants the people who are doing those things to be somebody they know. So you're very lucky, again, that you can get those services taken care right. of without worrying about, okay, I'm seeing clients from noon to 8:30, and now I have to run to Walgreens, so I won't get home till 9:30, 10 o'clock, or whatever it is. So when are you going to eat dinner? When are you going to take care of yourself?
Right. And I think one of the things that I'm taking away from this, and I think partially because I am mm-hmm. a counselor, is that there's a lot of pre-thought for me, you know, so that I don't do things like that. And I do say, no, I need to get home and have dinner. And I do, you know, I do work at working around my work schedule, and I don't drop everything unless it's a real emergency. And you know, even if I'm in the middle of a therapy session, and I see that my mom is calling, I don't pick up the phone. You know, I just call her back. Because now, if I see the facility, if they were calling,
right,
then I would pick up the phone. But if it's just my mom, she doesn't know what my schedule is, and so she'll just have to wait until I call her back. You know, and so it is setting some limits and some boundaries like that,
which is really important for you.
Yeah.
So I also think that caregivers need to go to an attorney. I think they need to know what their rights are and what limitations are to make sure that their parent, that the people that they take care of can be taken care of, and that if you have a parent or somebody that is going through the beginning of memory problems, that there is paperwork in hand so that decisions can be made, like a power of attorney.
Right.
Later on, as that kind of disease progresses, you might need to go into some kind of guardian position.
Right.
But you need those things put in place way before.
I think a huge gift that was given to me when my dad died, and we were doing paperwork with Social Security. The person that I worked with asked me how old my mother was and said, you know what, why don't you become her representative payee, which meant that I had opened up a checking account, her Social Security went into that checking account, and then I would give it to her, or I would decide how that money went, and I have mm-hmm. to do a report once a year. And I remember saying, well, why would I want to do that? And he said, oftentimes as people get older, they begin to fight you on these things. So he says, the sooner you could put stuff like that into place, mm-hmm. the better for you in the long run. Because, you know, let's say your parent is showing signs of dementia and they want to continue to be in control of their money, you know, and they're not really doing a good job. To try and fight to take that away from them at that point is almost impossible.
Right.
So that was a like a huge gift for me, because it really helped me start thinking well in advance of things that I needed to do.
Well, it could, it also probably played a part in her Medicaid program.
Yeah.
Also, that you are someone they can talk to.
Yeah.
So if they can't get to your mom or get her to understand, they can get to you.
Right.
It's like having bank accounts with your name as a second on it.
Little piddly things
that you don't think about.
Yep, we've done all of that.
That become monumental if not done at the right time.
Yeah. And I was fortunate, I want to say fortunate in some ways that my mom was so much in the throes of grieving that she was like, okay, do it, which was
made everything
a little easier, you know, rather than, you know, well, let's give it a year or two and then we'll do it. And then she might have really fought me on some of these things. So I would say I was really fortunate. But, you know, in terms of people who are at the early stages of caregiving, I think it's so important to really think things through, get paperwork taken care of beforehand. Just because I have power of attorney doesn't mean I have to use it.
Right. And that's why sometimes you need to see an attorney takes care of those specific kinds of issues.
Right.
And there are plenty in the phone book, and you can always call your local county bar association to get names of people that only deal with those issues.
Yeah, and that's exactly, you know, we did. We had an attorney that specializes in senior senior issues. So,
because there's lots of ins and outs, and even of financial. Maybe there's a trust account that needs to be taken care of.
Yep, we did all that. So we're actually getting to the end of our time. It goes fast, doesn't it?
It went really fast. I was afraid it was going to be very slow moving.
No, so many times that's the thing. And I'm like, oh, I could use, well, you know, I get on topics. I could spend all day on some of these things. So I do have something that just I wanted to kind of go through here in terms of coping as a caregiver. And like you said, Anne, finding support for yourself. Staying informed, not being afraid to ask questions, understanding the course of treatment for your loved one, you know, knowing what their medications are and, you know, all of those side effects, all those things. Work at keeping life as normal as possible. So if you're involved in things, work at staying involved in those things to the best of your ability. And learn to prioritize is a good thing. Giving yourself a break. Saying no doesn't mean you're selfish. I say that all the time to my clients. You know, it's about self-care. So when we're codependent, that was my show last week, when we're codependent and we want to move towards being self-caring, we feel guilty because we feel like we're being selfish, but it's not about being selfish. That's the other extreme. It's just balance and self-care. Really important. Give yourself a break. Rejuvenate your spirit is one of the things that's here. You know, you mentioned getting some support from, you know, your spiritual life, you know, your minister, your rabbi, you know, whatever, that's important. And not to lose hope, things work out. And make sure you have all your information together.
Mm-hmm.
So I
and find, breathe. Remember and breathe. To always breathe.
Always breathe. So, Anne, if someone wanted to get in touch with you and make an appointment or just talk with you, how would they do that?
The best way to do that is to call me. My phone number is 732-245.